case you don't know me, my name is Robin, and I'm glad to be up here tonight. So what is it about Christmas? I don't know if you've noticed, but there's something special going on outside. Around this time of year, with the lights and all the parties and the celebrating, there's something mysterious happening. I don't know what it is, but for example, I don't know what it is that causes people in my office to decorate. I don't know what it causes the people in my office to have holiday parties for the staff. I don't even know why they bother. You know, why does the city put up lights and have festivals? There's something about Christmas. We're more expectant. There's this sense of the spirit that we're looking for. You find a lot of people are looking for a miracle or something special to happen. Even in my own family, my mom used to say, when my brother and I would fight, she would say, "Can't you just get along? It's Christmas." As if something about Christmas would make a difference. So last night, when I was supposed to be preparing this sharing, I was at a Christmas party. Because I don't want to miss out. Year after year, I get my tree, I go to the parties, I get the gifts, I send the cards. Looking for something, right? And there's something there. We find something in Christmas, in the celebrating of it. But yet there's disappointment too. There's stress, there's busyness, there's pressure. And sometimes we wonder, what's it all for? Why do we even bother? There's kind of a bittersweetness to Christmas, if you know what I mean. Maybe it's the end of the year, getting to the point where we're evaluating how the year has gone. Back where I'm from in Boston, Christmas time is after Christmas. You're anticipating 4 months of frigid cold, so everyone gets a little depressed at Christmas time. Well, it's different in Hawaii, I guess, but for me, the nostalgia comes from not being able to go home and be with my family. For a quiet moment, between the bustle of buying and apprehension of giving, hope happens. Prayer is answered and peace seems possible. Every Christmas tugs us between human reality and lovely, mellow myth and mystery, between the conflict that surrounds us and the peace for which we yearn. The theme of this service tonight is hopes and fears, which comes from the Christmas carol we sang at the beginning, O Little Town of Bethlehem. Philip Brooks, who was a pastor in Philadelphia and later a chaplain of Harvard, he wrote O Little Town of Bethlehem in 1868 during the American Civil War. You might be interested to know that a lot of Christmas carols were penned during wartime. No one knows for sure if Brooks' carol was written because of a recent trip he took to Bethlehem a few years before, or whether he was talking about the streets of Philadelphia that lay desolate because so many had been killed in the war. I guess it doesn't really matter either way, for certainly Bethlehem was never a peaceful, idyllic place, certainly not today. So how poignant and challenging, and I dare I say outrageous, then are the words that the hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. So what does it mean that the hopes and fears of all the years are met in Jesus tonight? First, maybe we should define our terms. Fear we know a lot about, being in nightlife, right? Fear is the opposite of faith. Hope, according to Wikipedia, is an emotional belief in a positive outcome related to events and circumstances within one's personal life. And this is the part I like. Hope implies a certain amount of perseverance, believing that a positive outcome is possible, even when there is some evidence to the contrary. Some evidence to the contrary. What hope is not merely wishful thinking. Well, hopes and fears, I know all about those. I'm nothing if not a bundle of hopes and fears, many of which are related to one another. I hope to one day have a family, but I fear that I will always be alone. I hope to be part of a big work of God in this world, and sometimes I believe it will come to pass, but other times I don't think I'm doing very much, nor will I ever have much of an impact. I hope to find my place in this world, but sometimes I feel lost and afraid I won't find my way. I hope for my family to come to faith in Jesus, but I fear that at the end of time, I'll be the only one. And I really believe and have hoped that this whole thing, this Jesus thing, is true. But sometimes I have to shake my friends and tell them, please tell me. It hasn't all been made up. What about you? What do you hope for? What do you fear? And what does Christmas have to do with it all? Well, in asking God what he wanted me to share tonight, I think I heard from him. What I heard from him was simple. He just wants you to have some hope. The hope of Christmas. The good news. To sum it up, he came, he never left, and he's coming back. So I have hope at all in Christmas time because Jesus did come at one time. It wasn't all a story. It wasn't all made up. It wasn't wishful thinking on God's part. It was a plan that he had in the beginning of time, and it happened. That God broke into history, into time as we know it, and it started something that is rolling even now, and it's going to come to completion. The fact that God gave a rip. I mean, really. He followed through. He cared enough that Jesus did come. It wasn't made up. We call that the incarnation, that God came to be with us. And we feel that even now. I would say that Jesus never left, even though there was a time that he did go up into heaven to be with the Father, and he left us. Here he said, I will never leave you or forsake you. We see this evidence every time we reach out in his name. We bring his kingdom to earth. We see a little bit of Jesus. But I also think that he shows up, really shows up. I had a chance to go to Lebanon a couple of times on mission trips. And my first time there, we were in northern Lebanon in Hezbollah headquarters. It's called Baalbek. And we met a woman, her name, we'll just call her E. Because partly I forgot her name, and the other part is that it wouldn't be safe to tell you her name. But E was a Bedouin, and she grew up in a traveling people, a people that had no God, had no idea of God. They'd never heard of Jesus before. And back in the day when France was in Lebanon, the Bedouins were fighting against France to leave. And her father was sort of the chief soldier or fighter or whatever, chief tribesman, I don't know what the word is. But he was one of these guys with the big guns, and he had the bullets crisscrossed across his, you know, chest like this. He was a tough guy. Well, one night he had a dream, and in the dream, Jesus appeared. And Jesus said, I am Jesus Christ. Lay down your arms and follow me. You'll find me in Jerusalem. This happened to him four times. Well, never having heard the name of Jesus, he was quite sure that Jesus must be a person and needed to go find him in Jerusalem. So as you know, or may not know, Lebanon is north of Israel, so he traveled by night to Israel, to Jerusalem. He couldn't travel during the day because they were at war, and there was at least four factions after him. He gets to Jerusalem, and he goes to a cafe, and a Palestinian missionary is there sharing about Jesus Christ with someone else. He comes in, he hears the name, he said, that's the man I'm looking for. Do you know where I can find him? Now, I don't know, Robert Puyu and your family, can you imagine what it must be like to hear those words as a missionary for someone to say, how can I find out about this Jesus? I mean, he was thrilled, I'm sure. He said, why don't you come to my home later this day? And he gives him the address, and the man goes to the home. And he knocks on the door, and first of all, the missionary's wife answers, and she sees the weapons and all this, and she slams the door. Which is a great response, I thought. He knocks again, and this time the missionary opens the door. He comes, and there's this picture of Jesus on the wall. He said, that's the man! That's the one I'm looking for! Absolutely amazing. And this woman, her name is E. We met her when she was in her 60s. When she was 13, she was dying of appendicitis. She had heard a bit about Jesus, not a lot. She knew her father, knew him, because what had happened after he met the missionary, didn't finish my stories, he stayed a few days. He got to know this Jesus, and then he went back home. Well, several years later, she's almost dying of appendicitis. She needs emergency surgery, and unlike here, you know, things are more dire. But she had some faith in this Jesus she heard about, and so she, one night, she just knelt beside her bed and said, Jesus, I've heard of you, and I believe that you could heal me if you wanted to. And these were her words, that her bedroom door opened, and Jesus walked in and touched her on the head and said, daughter, be healed. Now her sister noticed this, and I don't know if you believe it or not, but I do. Our tears were running down her face when we heard the story. Her life has been marked by Jesus showing up again and again and again. It's an absolutely amazing life of someone who's seeking to follow Jesus and gather people to know him in an area where it's very unpopular to do so. For me, when I was in college, there was a time, a turning point in my life where I was just heartbroken. And I felt like God was giving me an opportunity to continue walking with him. And I didn't ask for it. I didn't even know what it was that was going to happen. I had no, unlike today, where we're used to sort of things like this maybe, I had no experience with this kind of story or experience. But in prayer, Jesus appeared to me. And he gave me a hug. And he took my hand. And that was a pressure on my hand or on my shoulders that I could feel. And that experience never left me. And I tell you these stories not so that you can feel like, oh, wow, look what he's doing for other people, but to let you know that he's still around. I believe he's here tonight. In fact, it might be even better if he were sharing with you than me. But if you can just imagine that maybe he's sitting right next to you. He promised that he would never leave us or forsake us, and I believe it's true. The best news, though, tonight is that Jesus is coming back. See, if Jesus just came once, that would not really be enough. It's because he came once that we can be assured that he'll come again. We look around and we see some improvements. You know, life has gotten somewhat better because he came the first time and because he lived the life he did. And he gave us the kingdom and the power of the Spirit. But let's face it, people, life is still hard. People still die before they should. There's still heartbreak. There's still war. See, that's the thing about Christmas. I think that's the tension that I feel. We go into the celebrating and the lights and the service, the joy because he has come. And I think we know it. I think we feel it. But then there's a sense of this longing and the yearning in us that recognizes that all is still not well with the world. That's why I love Romans 8, 1 through 3, I think it is, though I think a little a bit longer is going to be on the screen. It says this, with the arrival of Jesus, the Messiah, that fateful dilemma is resolved. Those who enter into Christ being here for us no longer have to live under a continuous low-lying black cloud. A new power is in operation. The spirit of life in Christ, like a strong wind, has magnificently cleared the air, freeing you from a fated lifetime of brutal tyranny at the handle of sin and death. God went for the jugular when he sent his own son. He didn't deal with a problem as something remote and unimportant. In his son, Jesus, he personally took on the human condition, entered the disordered mess of struggling humanity in order to set it right once and for all. And I love that, admitting that we're a disordered mess of struggling humanity. But yet he's going to set it right. He's going to set it right once and for all. And that's our hope. Later in Romans, it says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. And I wonder if you believe that. See, year after year, with tireless regularity and eternal patience, God reminds the world that he sent his son, Jesus, to save lost mankind. Christmas is also God's reminder that Jesus is coming back to earth again. Things are not finished. And Jesus himself promised when here on earth, I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me. And he promises justice. And he will bind up the broken. He will bring justice to this world. So we're in the Advent season. And Advent really means coming or arrival. And right now what we're doing is celebrating the fact that Jesus came once. We're also anticipating the fact that he's coming again. So we don't always feel ready for Christmas. We may have mixed feelings each time we celebrate it. But I think the fact that Christmas happens every year is a gift to us. I think I need Christmas to face God's promises again and again. Every year, like it or not, Christmas comes around, whether we're ready or not. If I had a prayer, it would be this. Jesus, thanks for coming. Thanks for giving a rip. Thank you that you're still here. And most of all, thanks that you're coming back. And I pray that you give us hope hope to believe it. And I believe that Emmanuel, this Jesus King I've been talking about, is here tonight, and he wants to give you hope. My job has really just been to be like the angel who declared, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Glory to God in the highest, and peace to men on earth on whom his favor rests." Well, this hope is a gift. We don't need to be perfect to receive it. We just need to need it and to want it. We're going to go into a time of worship, and I want to give you a chance to respond to what you've heard. If you look in your bulletins, you'll see some blank pieces of paper. What they're there for are for writing down your fears. If we're going to receive a gift of hope in what Jesus has for us, we need to have our hands free. And let's face it, most of the time our hands are full with our concerns, our doubts, our fears, and even our own hopes. The manger here is a crude invitation to take Jesus at his word and say, "Give me your hopes and your fears." He says, "I can meet them." To meet them, he means I can address them. I can satisfy them. So right now, I invite you to write down your fears or even your hopes. And when we sing the next song, what I'd like you to do is to bring them up to the manger and to put them in. That's your way of engaging with this invitation. To put them in the manger. To put them on Jesus and let him take them tonight. In the manger, you're going to find light bulbs. What I want you to do is to pick up a bulb. And behind your section of chairs, you want to walk behind the section of chairs. And behind the canvas, you're going to see a string of empty sockets. What I want you to do is put the light bulb in the socket. And then you can come and take your seat. We invite you, as a response to letting go of your fears, to plug into the truth of God's promises. As we plug in our bulbs, it's not so much that we're summoning faith, as in wishful thinking. We're tapping into faith, the light that came into the world. Thank you.